It's time to step into the Coming Out Lounge, a cool, safe space to be true to your sexual self, with your host, Rick Clemens. Rick has helped hundreds of people come out of the closet, and now each week he's bringing you cool insights for loving and accepting yourself, boosting your self-confidence, and living a guilt-free, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Cuddle up with yourself and get ready for heartwarming coming out stories, ideas for living authentically, and tips for being fully self-expressed. Now here's your host, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hello, Closet Busters. It is time once again to stop that closet dwelling and to step out, step up, and step into living your most powerful truth. Now, why is it that time? Well, because I truly believe that pretending really sucks and living your truth really rocks. And today's guest is someone that I've known for a few years now, and he's a guy that I would say, from my perspective, really lets his truth rock. He is a marriage and family therapist. He's a seasoned educator, public speaker. He is a gay dad. He's got two teens. Lord help him. He's been married a couple of times. So he has gone through a lot of the stuff that many of you may be facing right now. Coming out, having been married, going through divorces. There's lots of stuff. And today, as I bring my friend Elliot back in, I just felt really compelled to have like some just heartfelt conversations of what it's like on the other side of the closet door. Now, to kind of give you a perspective of Elliot, he does a lot of work around fertility. He does a lot of work with couples and helping them really grow into really intentional, intimate relationships. In fact, his book that's coming out is called Couples by Intention. We're going to talk a little bit about that. And he's just an all-around great guy who really, at the heart center, wants to help people really work and grow and connect together. And I don't know, I could tell you all sorts of other things about Elliot, but I'd rather we just jump in, dive in, and bring my friend Elliot to the microphone. Elliot, welcome to the Coming Out Lounge for the second time, buddy.
Thanks, Rick. It's always great to be here with you.
Well, it's always great to be talking to you and sharing stuff. So let's just kind of start right in. I think the big thing that's starting to happen as gay marriage is now finally, in the U.S. at least, legal in all 50 states, we've got a lot of stuff starting to show up on how the family dynamic starts to shape and how the conversations may be twisting from the days when you want to hook up to now, well, if we start dating, what's your view of gay marriage and where do we go and all this sort of stuff? And then, of course, the parent conversation. So you and I are both parents, so we can talk some about that. But I would like to start the conversation really around how, from your perspective as a therapist, and I know you don't just work with gay and lesbian people, but in general, how is the shape of couplehood really starting to like shift and change from your perspective?
It's such a great question. You know, the relationships that I'm seeing and working with now are very different than the relationships I saw when I was growing up. You know, the model for how people come together and how people meet are very, very, very different. Before, we would talk an awful lot about this concept of monogamy and how important monogamy was, and anything that was non-monogamous was considered negative. Now I'm working with couples who monogamy is a discussion, and what does monogamy mean? And I spend a lot of time with couples trying to figure out with them what their definition of monogamy is and what it is that they're looking for. You know, we talk about how every relationship has a purpose. What is the purpose of the relationship that you're in, and how do you get that need met? So it becomes a very interesting, very lively conversation that I have with folks just to get started, to get some baseline going.
Yeah. So I think this is interesting because this is when you and I were chatting before the interview a few weeks ago, we talked about this monogamy issue. And I want to make sure the listeners realize we're not just talking, this conversation isn't just coming up in the gay and lesbian world. In fact, I was just at a conference probably about 6 weeks ago, where one of the meetups that happened at the conference was about open relationships. And this was not a gay and lesbian conference. This was a pretty heteronormative environment. Yes, there were a lot of gay and lesbians there as well, but I found it really fascinating when I went to that meetup. There was about 40 people there, and out of the 40 people there, I would say there were four of us that were from the gay and lesbian community. So this monogamy thing is really starting to show up in different ways in a lot of different conversations, it sounds like, especially in your practice.
Well, I think what happens is it's not in the closet anymore.
Right.
And people are understanding that sex and sexuality is far more open. Children today are exposed to intimacy and sexuality at a much earlier age than we were growing up. When we were growing up, it was something that was hidden. It was dark. It was, you know, something we found in our father's nightstand, mm-hmm. That we talked about on the playground. And now sexuality and body and intimacy and sex is something that children from the very earliest ages are presented with in all aspects of their life. And so what happens is that now this question of monogamy has really shifted. Marriage has shifted. Whether or not a relationship requires marriage to be a long-term relationship is now a discussion versus an assumption. Mm-hmm. And that really allows people to explore what their definitions of themselves become. One of the things I talk a lot about with monogamy, with the couples I work with, is that most people think that monogamy is the harder choice. One of the things I tell them all the time is actually having a non-monogamous relationship is a much more difficult choice because it requires far more rules, better communication, better structures, greater clarity, because that non-monogamous relationship is going to shift. And they think, well, if we just have an agreement and we set it up, then we should be able to carry on. And what they don't understand is that people in relationships change all the time. And so if you're going to have a non-monogamous relationship, you have to constantly be checking in and constantly making sure that you and your partner are being nurtured and being nourished and being fed in a way that's really meaningful. And being able to talk about monogamy in a way that is not just linear, right. That monogamy happens on so many levels. We have sexual monogamy, we have physical monogamy, we have emotional monogamy, we have social monogamy, we have financial monogamy, familial monogamy. I mean, I could keep going. Mm-hmm. And where we are on that spectrum, on each of those levels, becomes a really critical part of the discussion, because couples may come together and say, you know, on the sexual monogamy, we're pretty clear and we're in agreement with what that is.
Right.
But they get caught up on the emotional monogamy or the social monogamy or the physical monogamy, the intimacy monogamy. Mm-hmm. And that's where things get tripped up. And so it can't be this black and white discussion.
So for the listener, I want, and you and I have talked about this, so I know we both get it, but I want to break this down a little bit more. So let's give me an example of like an emotional monogamy situation. What is it when we talk about emotional monogamy that we're truly talking about?
It's how do we feel connected with others? Oftentimes people in a non-monogamous relationship might try to set up rules that say something such as, all right, we can have sex with others, but we can't have a partner repeat. Mm-hmm. Or you can't start to have feelings for another person. Mm-hmm. And what ends up happening is that we may actually have a sexual monogamy, but an emotional non-monogamy. Mm-hmm. And so what can often happen is one partner will come in and say, my partner has been cheating on me. My partner is having an affair. And the other partner says, I haven't had sex with another person. I haven't touched anybody but myself. Because monogamy is more than just keeping it in your pants.
Right.
And so the first partner says, right, but you're talking to this person. You're having an emotional affair. Or you're watching pornography and you're having a connection with someone or something other than me.
Yes,
even if you haven't had a sexual engagement.
Right. And I think this is a key piece for people to really start to understand that this is where so much of the relationship can begin to be built stronger, is when you start to understand these conversations that you're allowing yourself to have and really giving yourself permission to be in. In fact, I was at the same conference that I was at, one of the speakers, his name is John Acuff. And he had me rolling on the floor, and actually pretty much all 3,500 of us that were watching him speak, when he said, and so, you know, and then that night I actually committed Netflix adultery, which was watching a series, you know, whatever it may be, Orange is the New Black or whatever your series of choice is, you know, House of Cards or whatever. And then you guys go three or four, you know, episodes ahead of your spouse. And then you try to have to act like, okay, now I've never seen this. But what made me laugh so hard about this is happening in so many areas of our life, whether it's financially, emotionally, physically, sexually. We don't realize that monogamy has a huge umbrella over so much of our relationships.
That's right. And, you know, and we really do expand this. I have a group that I call Couples by Intention, which is really the foundation of the book that I'm writing at this moment. And in Couples by Intention, one of the things that we look at is that you get to define your couplehood in the way that makes sense to you, and that there's no one right definition. But in the defining process, you have to figure out how will you be a couple intentionally. And too often, couples will start to get together, and in the beginning, everything is great and everything is wonderful. And before you know it, they're on autopilot. And time goes by, and they're like, how did we get here? This isn't working for me. And they don't know what to do about it. And to really be a meaningful couple, to really have true intimacy and true connection, there has to be intention. Mm-hmm. And it comes out in every aspect of the coupledom.
Yeah. Well, and so again, I'm going to ask you to kind of give your perspective of what is couple intention really look like? And I know it's different for each couple. I'm going to put that caveat out there. But if someone's really going, trying to steer away from the autopilot couplehood, what would be like an intentional piece of couplehood?
I think an intentional piece of couplehood is when you understand that love and sex operate on a sine wave, that there are peaks and valleys. There are times we are so passionately, madly in love with our partner. And there are times where, quite frankly, our partner annoys us and we need some space away. There are times that we are very erotically charged by our partner. And sometimes, quite frankly, we just want to roll over and go to sleep. But the thing that keeps us together in the midst of all of the peaks and valleys is one very special kind of glue, and that's curiosity. And curiosity is the key to relationships, because as long as we remain curious about each other, it tells us several things. If I'm still curious about you, it means I haven't taken you for granted. If I'm still curious about you, it means that you can still influence my thinking. If I'm still curious about you, it means that I haven't learned everything there is. It means that there is still room to grow. It means that there are discussions to be had. Curiosity says that I understand you may not think the way that I think, and that you may not feel the way that I feel. You may not see the world the way that I see it. And I have to understand that in order to connect with you.
You know, this is interesting.
In return, I want you to be curious about me.
This is really interesting, because I just spent the weekend at a seminar with this gal by the name of Nayurka. And Nayurka was one of Tony Robbins' proteges, and she was actually like his top person for about 5 years back in the early 2000s. And one of the principles she brought forward in this work for us as humans was, and it's interesting because it's part of something I'm building too, was this piece of staying curious in life. The minute we quit being curious is the moment the mundane, the autopilot, the life becomes humdrum sets in. And I think as couples, especially as couples, and I'm going to say couples not only like intimate couples, but even as couples as friendships, as couples as parents and whoever, the minute we lose the curiosity in those relationships is the moment that we invite heartache, pain, trouble, discontent to show up. And I'm wondering if that's pretty much what you're getting at, is there's where everything starts to unravel, so to speak.
Well, absolutely. And the simplest way to put it is that assumptions are the exact opposite of curiosity. Mm-hmm. When we start to lose curiosity, we start making assumptions. And we start making assumptions, it means we're not involving our partner in the discussion, in the experience, in the process. And oftentimes, relationships start to crumble and fray when assumption takes over from curiosity, because then, well, I just know how he's going to respond. I know what she's going to say. She's not going to like this. Or if I say this to him, this is the reaction I'm going to get, which means you're not giving your partner the opportunity to be a different person. And you have to have a relationship with the person who's in front of you today, not the person that you were with 6 months ago, and not the person you hope to change them into a year from now, but the person in front of you today. And if that's the case, that means that the person in front of you today is new. Mm-hmm. It's not the same person that was here last week, because life has happened. Shifts have happened. Perspective has happened. And to live with intention, to be curious about your partner, is to say, who are you today? Mm-hmm. I'm not going to assume you're the same person you were 6 months ago. So let me figure out who you are today and let me attach to that. Because ultimately, what this all comes down to is we want to be chosen. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to draw a bridge here for you. Because the intentionality part of being a couple, if curiosity is the glue, the choice, this issue of being chosen is the ideal. I get to make a choice every day. And I wake up every day and I get to decide if I choose you. Mm-hmm. And I choose you when you're kind and when you're loving and when you're beautiful and when you make a pot of coffee in the morning before I come downstairs. And I choose you, quite frankly, when you're bloated and gassy and when you leave your underwear on the floor turned inside out and on the floor next to the hamper.
Right.
And when you leave toothpaste in the sink and when you're late and when you burn the dinner, I choose you. Mm-hmm. And in return, I need to wake up every single day and feel chosen. Mm. When I'm kind, when I'm loving, when I leave my underwear on the floor, when I burn the dinner, I need to feel chosen.
This is a biggie. It's like, okay, I feel like Oprah right now, because that's a tweetable right there. I choose you and I want to feel chosen. I love it. Because I think this is where we start to take each other for granted. No matter how long, and I mean, my partner and I are going on 14 years at this point, and this feeling chosen is something that you work at. It isn't like, okay, it just happens. No, it's something you've got to work at. It's like walking into your place of work when I was in a corporate America and realizing, okay, they chose to have me here. They chose to put me in this position. Oh, now they've chosen to put me here. Oh, now they've chosen to put me here. It was something that fed my soul. It fed my, okay, yes, it fed my ego as well. But I think when we realize we want to be chosen and we want to feel chosen, it adds so much to the glue, as you say, of the relationship. Regardless of what kind of relationship it is, it adds so much to this. So if somebody's starting to feel that weird sense of, okay, I don't feel chosen, or, you know, I don't feel wanted or whatever, but I'm going to use your words, chosen, what's the best possible route to starting to fix that?
Well, in part of this is where the curiosity and the choice work together. One of the first things I would ask somebody is, so what would it feel like to be chosen? Mm. How would you know you were chosen? And most people can talk about, you know, feeling disconnected or unplugged or distant from their partner, and they focus on the disconnect.
Yep.
And when I turn it around and I ask the question in that way, what would it feel like to be chosen? Can you go back to a time in the relationship when you felt chosen? What was different? What behavior would your partner show you if you were chosen? How would you know it? And then in alignment with that, how would your partner know that you choose them? Mm-hmm. What do you do to let your partner know of your choice?
So it's really like language. Yeah, it's really like the two-way street then. This is what we're really talking about. You know, it can't be just, okay, I want to feel chosen, but I'm not going to do the same for you. It's really both have to feel chosen, both have to want to make the choice to be in this, and you can't just do the one-way street sort of thing.
Well, the one-way street is a really imbalanced relationship, isn't
right.
it?
Yeah.
Could you imagine choosing someone and not being chosen in return? How gratifying and how satisfying could that be? And how long could you stay in that relationship before it became torturous?
Yeah, exactly. So it kind of also brings me the thought that as you were speaking just a moment ago about, you know, the chosen and feeling chosen and everything, life starts to get in the way. And a lot of times we forget the importance of this choosing and being chosen, especially when, like you and I, we have teen kids or any kids involved in the relationship. It's very hard and difficult for parents at times to go, okay, I've got to take care of these two little, three little, five little, ten little, whatever, however many kids you got. You got to take care of them because you brought them into this life, or you're bringing them into your life. And then I've got work. Oh, and then I've got these obligations for this or that. And then suddenly, at the very bottom rung of the ladder is the couplehood.
Well, you know what's really interesting is I talk to folks a lot about having inverted triangles. Mm. If you imagine a triangle, and at the peak of the triangle is the family, mm-hmm. and the kids and the job and the responsibility and the household and paying the bills and getting the chores done. And in the middle section is your spouse, your partner. And at the very, very base, the bottom, is yourself. And oftentimes what happens with couples is they say, I'm exhausted. I have no energy. What's in this for me? Because, right. you know, at the end of the day, how can you connect to your spouse when you're feeling incredibly drained? How can you connect to your spouse when you spent all day scrubbing toilets and listening to mommy, 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 daddy, 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 daddy,
right.
and your boss and the bills? How do you use that as fuel for connection? And what I tell people all the time is you have to flip that triangle upside down. That if you really want to be good for everybody, it's me first. I have to do self-care. And that means keeping my body healthy, tending to my own spirit, making sure that I'm getting enough sleep, that I'm eating well, that I am taking care of me. Because if I don't take care of me, I can't be there for my partner.
Mm-hmm.
And if I want to be fully present in my relationship, I have to take my tool, my body, myself, and make sure that I can bring that in its entirety. And if I can't be there for my relationship, what good modeling is that for my children? Because ultimately, in our relationships, we are modeling for our children what real intimacy and relationship and connection looks like. And if our children can't see us doing that, they can't see us being meaningfully connected, and whatever that means to you,
yep.
then we are not of service to our children. And so oftentimes that triangle needs to be flipped absolutely upside down. You will actually do more for your children. You will be better for your children if you take care of the self first, and then the relationship, and then the children.
Well, I think the easy correlation here as a, you know, as an example would be, if you're someone who is athletic, you're always trying to do something to take care of yourself, and that is who you are. You miss one day of doing your going to the gym or your run or your cycling, whatever it is. And that day usually ends up being one of those days where you probably feel like everything else in the world is going wrong as well, because you've missed your routine. You haven't taken care of you in the way you needed to. And I love this concept of flipping it over. Now, I also hear this a lot all over the world, take care of yourself first. But usually when I hear somebody talk about this, the first thing, and luckily none of the listeners can bite back right now, is, but that's selfish. So what do you do when people say, but that's selfish to take care of yourself first?
Absolutely, it's selfish. That's the point. Because selfish means of the self.
Mm-hmm.
And that is exactly right. We talk about selfish like it's a bad thing. I'm not advocating that anybody be self-centered, mm-hmm. but selfish, to be of the self first,
yeah.
is not a negative thing.
Well, I want to make sure we get this distinction, because you just brought it up so beautifully. There is a complete distinction between selfish and self-centered. The two are completely different.
That's right. And it is good modeling for our children and our spouse. I want my spouse to take care of himself. I want him to have time to go to the gym and to do what he does to feel gratified. Because I love him, because I care about him, because he will be there for me better, mm-hmm. more holistically. He will be there for the children in a more holistic way if he can take care of himself.
Yep.
That way he can leave work at work. He can leave the stress of the day wherever he needs to put it. If he needs to bring it to me, that's fine. But I'm not going to get the full bucket of everything. I'm going to get what he needs to bring to me, because he has taken care of himself. And I think that's really good modeling for the children. I want the children to learn to value themselves as people of the world, and to yeah. understand that if they go on the adventures I want them to go on, I want them to be world travelers. I want them to see the world. I want them to be able to apply themselves in really challenging situations. They can only do that if they're taking care of themselves. I need to model that.
Well, and I think the thing that shows up for me as you're sharing this, and I'm right there with you. I believe in this, you know, taking care of self and everything is, if you're tired and exhausted and you have no room for yourself, and this becomes the pattern, and it keeps repeating, and it keeps repeating, at some point, the self is going to show up, and it's going to say in a very loud voice, what the fuck about me? What about me? And most times, it's going to show up in exactly that tone. And it's going to come from a place of just bitterness, of frustration, because in some way, you feel that everybody is out for you not having your life. And oftentimes, I believe that's when things start to disintegrate and somebody will go off and they will do something that takes care of themselves, like have an affair, go do a hookup, whatever it is, because suddenly it's gratifying and I took care of myself, but they took care of themselves in a way that probably wasn't healthiest for the relationship at large.
Now, it's the joy of the midlife crisis, quite frankly.
It is.
In a really maladaptive way.
Yeah, yeah. And I think oftentimes people go, oh, but, you know, they did this out of, you know, hate or whatever. No, that wasn't it. There was a mismatch in so many ways. There was not enough communication. There was not enough feeling like that you could say what you needed to say to your spouse or your partner or your boyfriend or girlfriend, however you want to put the label on it.
Yes. And when couples come to me after an event like that has happened, one of the first things I say to them is, I can understand that you feel bad about it. I can understand that you can see the hurt in your partner.
Yep.
What did it mean to you? Mm-hmm. You went out and you had an affair. You went out and bought the red sports car. You went out and did something that was so out of character. And you can see that you hurt your partner. You can feel guilt about it. But there's the ambivalence, that kind of push-pull of, but I'm kind of glad I did it. Mm-hmm. Because it gratified me on some level. What's that about?
Yeah. And that's a deep question for a lot of people. I'm sure you see it all the time because you probably ask that question and in some way you probably get the blank stare and the silence.
You know what's interesting is I don't.
Hmm.
Because most people know what it means to them.
Interesting.
They're afraid to say it.
Okay, yeah, that's probably very true.
But most people can tell you it made me feel alive. It made me feel heard. It made me feel acknowledged. It made me feel sexy.
Hmm.
It made me feel desired. Mm-hmm. So most people know what it's about, but there's shame in wanting all of that. And right. This is part of that living by intention. If couples are living intentionally, then you know that your partner needs to feel desired. Mm-hmm. You need to feel desired.
Yeah.
And being able to carve out those spaces in your relationship where you can come together, where it is just you and your partner, and you can hold that space sacred.
Yeah.
And I talk a lot about sacred space in my practice. And sacred space might be a physical place in your room.
Right.
For example, in our house, our children are never allowed in our bedroom. They're just never allowed. They're not allowed to cross the threshold without being invited in, because that is our sacred space. That is right. Our place to go and to feel connected. If we need to talk, if we need to relax, we need to get away, or if we need or desire intimacy, that's our space. And I don't want the world and my children and everything else in that space.
Well, I think what
sacred
you just described, though, is a beautiful way of setting boundaries, which, again, modeling how to set boundaries to our children is so important. I think so much of what's going on out there in the world is because people didn't learn how to healthily set boundaries in life.
No, especially when we were growing up and there was this real power split between adults and children. Children were to be seen and not heard, and the adherence to parental rule, and everything is very different now. Kids have a very different sensibility. And I understand that lives are complicated and people lead faster lives. And so I talk to people that sacred space, if it's not a room, like in our house, it's a room.
Right.
It could be a, you know, a place, but it might be a time.
Right.
You know, the importance of date night or Sunday morning coffee and walking the dog. It's the you know, the kids have to go to bed at a certain time because, you know, at 9 o'clock, it's parent time. And I know you may not be tired, but we need to have our time.
Right.
And 9 o'clock is an appropriate bedtime for you. After 9 o'clock is sacred time for us.
Absolutely.
And so whatever that sacred space and sacred time is, but having the time to connect and being intentional about it. Mm-hmm.
So I can't believe we're like already to the end of the podcast. I could sit and you and I could chat all day long, but it's been a while since you've been on, and I know things have changed as relationships do. So now here we are. It is now 2015. Since you and I met, everything has changed on the gay and lesbian front in so many ways. So as somebody that may be sitting out there listening to you and I having this beautiful conversation about intimacy and love and couplehood and parenthood, I know there's going to be some shifts out there for people who are starting to come out, because now there's a welcoming embrace that was bigger than it was, say, a year ago, 5 years ago. But as someone who does this work, you know, what would you recommend to someone who's embarking on this journey out of the closet in this day and age?
I'm really glad you asked this question, because this is an important one. And, you know, I'm thrilled that, you know, the Supreme Court passed the law that we have gay marriage in all 50 states. But don't be fooled. Just because we have gay marriage in all 50 states doesn't solve the emotional problems that so many people are having.
Yeah.
You know, the day that the law was passed, I had said to one of my gay patients, I said, "Did you see the news and are you excited?" And he is a man who had been struggling with coming out, who had such guilt and shame, and that the passing of the law actually amplified his feeling of guilt and shame and really started to make him feel even more disconnected from the world around him, and affected him in really negative ways. You know, and so don't want to take anything away from the great progress we've made, but to understand that while the world in general may be more open and accepting, and thank goodness it is, we still have those folks that are out there struggling, and that everybody's working at this at your own pace. And if you're feeling that the world is going too fast for you, you will go at your own pace.
Mm-hmm.
That when you are ready for a relationship, when you feel like you can do it, it will be there. And if you're struggling and you need help, go see a really great therapist that can help you with it. Use your resources. Yeah. If you're out in the world and you're feeling confident in yourself and you're excited about the prospect of relationship, of marriage, of connection, then find somebody who matches your ideal of what a relationship looks like, that understands that the relationship you're looking for has a purpose. And you find somebody who wants to share in that purpose.
Absolutely. And I love that you brought up this piece about going and finding someone. You know, the reason I have different people from lots of different walks of life, lots of different practitioners on the Coming Out Lounge, and I want to make sure the listeners really hear this, is because you may not resonate with me as the Coming Out coach. You may not resonate with Elliot as a counselor, but there are lots of people out there. And I think it's really important, as he, you know, was describing his patient, that you find the people that give you the support that you desire, not need. It may feel like a need, but it's what you desire so that you can step into this in your own way. Because every one of us goes through the closet door our own way, and everyone lives our out life our own way. And nothing I find more saddening, I guess would probably be the right word to say, than someone who comes out of the closet and then they get sucked into, now this is how you do gay life. And they suddenly get boxed into, this is how you are if you're gay, or this is how you are if you're lesbian, or this is how you are if you're bisexual. You are who you are, and you just happen to be gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender in your life, and you do that your way, is one of the biggest messages that I know I preach, and I know Elliot pretty much feels the same way, is be who you are.
That's right. If you're going to come out and figure out what kind of gay man you're supposed to be and be that. Figure out what kind of gay woman you're supposed to be and be that, or trans person and be that.
Absolutely.
Be who you're supposed to be.
So if you happen to be in the Boston area, you can hook up with Elliot at his beautiful practice. It's called Insight Brookline. You can find his website at www.insightbrookline.com. You can also hook up with Elliot on his own personal website, which is Elliot
Cronenfeld, K-R-O-N-E-N-F-E-L-D, ElliotCronenfeld.com. And anything else you'd like to leave with the listeners as we wrap it up here today, Elliot?
You know, I think that it's always great to talk to you, Rick. And I think the one thing I would leave the listeners with is remember that as you engage in a relationship, don't go on autopilot. Be intentional. Be awake. Go into the relationship with your eyes wide open.
Absolutely. And again, the name of your forthcoming book is?
Couples by Intention.
Love it. Love it. And do we have an idea when that book may be coming out? Are we looking at 2016 possibly?
We're looking at the spring of 2016.
Awesome. Awesome. I can't wait. I can't wait to have that book in my arsenal of stuff to help people with. And so if you really enjoyed what you've heard Elliot and I talking about today, you can always hook up with us at the Coming Out Lounge show pages. There'll be notes about what we've talked about with Elliot. Of course, you can always find us on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, wherever you're downloading the podcasts that you love to listen to. And if you really feel compelled to really connect with either Elliot or I, just go to the show page for this show and you'll find ways to connect with Elliot as well as myself. And speaking of books, my new book, Frankly, My Dear, I'm Gay, will probably be out momentarily. I'm looking forward to that. And it's a journey of coming out, how to do this when you come out late in life, different tips and tricks for really stepping through it. But it's not all serious. It is actually kind of funny. I tried to make it a fun romp through the coming out process. And with that, I'm going to sign off today, as I always do, saying just go out there, be yourself, and never stop stepping out, stepping up, and stepping in to living your most powerful truth. I'm Rick Clemens, the host of the Coming Out Lounge, and we will catch you in just another week. Take care, everyone.
You've just experienced the Coming Out Lounge. Go online to www.comingoutlounge.com to learn more, and tune in again next week for more stories and tips for being true to yourself.